Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, welcome back, friends. Mike Farrell's Sports Talk. My name is Adam, and as always, the godfather of recruiting, the godfather of news this week, as it turns out, Mr. Mike Farrell. Back again. It's only fitting, Mike, you'd be on your own show. Have you been busy this week? Anything going on? Anything new that we should talk about?
Nothing new. Nothing good. Okay, good. Talk about.
So, all right, well, thanks for joining us on the Mike Farrell Show.
Yeah, bye. So, Arch Manning thing, if you haven't heard, and again, this is the way we live in society today. I did a podcast a couple days ago. I was asked a question: is he overrated? I said yes, and I said this. I said if his film came in under the name Arch Smith or Bill Smith or whatever, and people evaluated it, had no idea who he was, had no idea who his uncles were, his grandfather, and really had no idea how many offers he had, they would rate him as a 3-star. That's what I saw on the film, a high 3-star. Now, once you find out he's a Manning, you get a half a star for that because there's never been an unsuccessful Manning quarterback. So I have no problem with a 4-star. But I will tell you this. When I first started ranking the 2023 class and going through them, I had him in the picture for number one overall. And then I started to think to myself, this is old habit. And one of the industry secrets that I'll share in my book eventually is that there are a lot of factors to who's number one. And, as far as who will drive traffic and who will bring this, that, and the other. And, I started thinking to myself, I'm working for myself. I can do whatever I want. So I went back and looked, and then I looked at the Elite 11 tapes of all those kids. And then I went back and looked at all of them again. And then I looked at Arch, and he kept sliding down. He became like 6th, 7th best quarterback in this class, which is not a 5-star, which is not the number one player in the country. So there's the long-winded explanation of him being overrated. He doesn't suck. I wouldn't rate him as a 3-star. He's going to be a 4-star when I rate in August, but that's how it blew up.
But yeah, so the comments, to be fair to you, here's what I want to do. I want to kind of direct the criticisms that you're facing your way to give you a chance to respond. Sure. So here's what I saw on social media. I saw some people say that you started him as a 3-star and that by the end of the interview, you made some sort of a comment that he might even be a 2-star. So is that accurate? Was that your intention during that part of that conversation? How do you respond to that?
No, what I will say is this, that I've been doing this for a very, very long time. Back when VHS tapes were dropped, in your mailbox, and the mailman hated me. There was no huddle. There was no online film. You had to call coaches and get VHS tapes sent to you. In the days of the early days of ranking kids, the late 1990s, you really didn't know. You would get unsolicited VHS tapes too, because my address was out there and would just send me stuff. If I put in a tape and looked at a kid, and I didn't know who he was, I didn't know if he had any offers, I would have to evaluate him without any of that information, not knowing that, Nick Saban wants him, Kirby Smart wants him, Dabo Swinney wants him, those are all national title winners. Steve Sarkisian wants him, that his last name is Manning. He's the nephew of Peyton and Eli. You wouldn't know that stuff. I guarantee you, and what I said is that there are analysts out there in this industry who would rate him as a 2-star. They'd pop him up. They'd give him a 2-star, profile. And then when they found out all those offers, all that interest, the last name, oh my God, all of a sudden he would turn into a 4 or 5.
One of the things I read on your website, MikeFerrellSports.com, you had sort of a piece explaining kind of a fact or fiction about how you arrive at these decisions and these rankings. And one thing I'd love for you to get a little bit more detailed on, you talked about you rank quarterbacks pre-Elite 11, then you let them go to Elite 11, and then you rank quarterbacks post-Elite 11. Obviously, Arch did not attend Elite 11, but right. You referenced in your article that you still went back and did a bit of a deep dive on his tape and his film relative to the comparison you saw from the other kids that went to Elite 11. So can you take us a little bit inside that process? How are you evaluating what you're looking at, sort of how that works for you?
Yeah, and I've been doing this since the Elite 11 started 100 years ago. And again, I don't like to make big changes based on the Elite 11 because – you know, the Elite 11 back in the day with Bob Johnson and Nike and all that stuff was really, really great. You got a lot of evaluation out of it. You got a lot of throws. You got a lot of duress. And then it became a little bit softer as it was incorporated and bigger names started to take over. And I won't name names, but I'll say, you know, they kind of dumbed it down a little bit when it comes to throws. Now, I'm not a quarterback whisperer or an expert, right? But it was hard to evaluate. Then they grouped it with the opening, which was awesome. Then you've got the best of the best in 7-on-7 and all this other stuff. But every year I've done this, and I try not to make huge changes based on the Elite 11 because it's, again, it's not real football. But camps will show you mechanics, arm strength, velocity, accuracy, ability to throw and run, all that stuff. And I've been doing this with the Elite 11, you know, for 20 plus years. So my process is this: go through the camp season, evaluate film, junior film, camp film. Then the Elite 11 comes around, take a look at it, then go back and look at every one of them. And not just the guys who have participated in the Elite 11, all the quarterbacks that are highly ranked, and then compare them and look at their film again. And this is how colleges do it too. I mean, colleges will pass on a kid that they didn't offer, then they'll see five other schools offer them, and then they'll look at his film again and say, did we miss something? Mm-hmm. And they'll decide if they did or didn't. For me, it's the same process. Did I miss something, or was I overvaluing this kid? And I'll admit, I was overvaluing Arch Manning because of the last name. And it just struck me after looking at all these Elite 11 quarterbacks that I was doing that.
So if you, and again, I know you're not a quarterback coach, you're not a quarterback whisperer, as you said, but if you were advising Arch Manning, where are the areas of his game that you think you need to see more consistency or a little bit more of, where you'd say, hey, I think he actually is trending in that really top upper echelon?
Well, listen, he's a big kid, right? He's 6'4", he's 215 pounds, he's got a live arm. He doesn't have an elite arm, it's not a special arm. When he gets to Texas, he's going to see a special arm in Quinn Ewers. Now, that doesn't mean Quinn Ewers is a better quarterback or will be a better quarterback, because a lot of it's between the ears. And that's why the Manning name is worth a half a star to me, because he's been tutored and coached by some pretty great quarterbacks. You know, level of competition isn't great. It's small football in Louisiana. He was exposed a little bit in the playoffs. You know, he had a real bad game. I think it was 6-17 with a pick, and just couldn't get in a rhythm at all. Now, he doesn't play with elite players, but one of his receivers is going to Texas. So that's, you know, it's good enough. But he's in a private school and he's playing there for reasons. If he wasn't named Manning, he would have probably either not gone there or transferred out to a bigger, higher classification. So what I really want to see, it's not a mechanical thing. You know, his footwork is solid. His mechanics are solid. His arm is solid. But there's nothing that jumps out on the film to me after watching it over and over again. And actually, believe it or not, wanting to see five stars. I really wanted to, because I want to have Arch Manning be a five-star. Nothing popped off the film that says, wow, this is Trevor Lawrence. You know, wow. And I know people are going to laugh. Wow, this is Josh Rosen. Well, Josh Rosen sucks. No, he didn't suck. He was amazing in high school. And he went on to be a top 10 NFL pick and just sort of attitude his way around the NFL. But some of these guys that I've seen, you know, and he's not an athlete like a Terrell Pryor or Vince Young or anybody like that. I'll tell you, the comparison for me is a smaller Jimmy Clausen. And Jimmy Clausen was the LeBron James of high school football. Sure. He was number one, and everybody knew about him since his freshman year. And Charlie Weiss anointed him and turned down Mitch Mustang's commitment to get Jimmy Clausen. And in hindsight, Jimmy Clausen had a good career. He was a second round pick and hung around the NFL for a while. But in hindsight, he was not the number one player in the country. So I'm, you know, Jimmy Clausen is much smaller. He doesn't have the upside. He doesn't have, you know, Casey Clausen isn't Peyton Manning. But it's just, to me,
breaking news, yes,
number one. Yeah, he just doesn't jump out as number one to me. And this doesn't mean he sucks. This is the problem in today's world, right? First of all, you hate Texas. I don't hate Texas. You hate the Manning. Okay, ready? Look at this.
Yeah, it looks like a Colts helmet. Yeah, for those who are not watching, Colts helmet looks like an autograph, I assume. That's Peyton?
Oh, it's a Peyton Manning autograph, Colts helmet, Speedflex. Gorgeous, gorgeous. And I'm a huge Peyton Manning fan. I'm a Tom Brady fan. You know, how can you be both, a fan of both? I like football. I like good football players. I don't have an Eli one because he's not good enough for my collection. Okay. No offense to Eli. Listen, you beat Brady twice, but your career was not Peyton Manning's career.
That's, by the way, so, that's not going to help you get people to believe you do. You like the Mannings, by the way.
Well, that's true. FYI. There's a big battle. Is he a Hall of Famer or not? And my thing is always in the NFL, can you write the history of the NFL without somebody? And you can't write it without Eli Manning. You can't.
Well, I think you can have a Hall of Fame performance, but not have a Hall of Fame career, right? He had two Hall of Fame performance style games, but body of work, I think that's where you have to do some measurables on that.
Right. But I will say it's okay for him to be in the Hall of Fame. I don't mind that. I think you could tell the history of the NFL without Phillip Rivers, even though he put up massive numbers, because this is such a pass happy world we live in. You can't tell the history of the NFL without Eli Manning. So listen, they're funny. They're great. I love watching, you know, ESPN2 Monday Night Football. So I can listen to those two guys go back and forth and make fun of Charles Barkley or each other or whatever. I love them. Steve Sarkisian's a great coach. There's assistant coaches at Texas that I like. This has nothing to do with any of them. It doesn't have anything to do with Arch either. I don't know him. I've never spoken to him. I've never spoken to Cooper. They don't want to talk to me. They don't care who I am. I'm just saying that I know how things work in the industry, and I know how sometimes you can get caught up in the name of somebody as a legacy, and I think that's what's happening here. I've got him probably as a top 100 player and in the 6-7 ranging quarterback. That's not bad. But in this day and age, if you say he's overrated, then all of a sudden he has to suck. And that's not what I'm saying.
Right. Well, to be fair, the other thing I think I've heard you say, and I'll let you address this, is that he has the ceiling to continue to improve, right? He's got a lot of runway to continue to become a better quarterback, get some additional reps under his belt, play some tougher competition. So you feel like, hey, listen, even though I'm saying he's here right now, the ceiling he has in front of him is great. And if he capitalizes on that ceiling, he can be a fantastic quarterback, right? So you're saying the story's not written at this point.
No, and it never is with any recruit. I don't care who you are. It wasn't written with what the heck's his name? Kyle Wright. Okay. Old time band. Miami, right? It wasn't written with him. It wasn't written with Anthony Morelli at Penn State. It's never fully written. It's just what you see based on what you can evaluate. He doesn't go to camps. You know, he didn't go to the other 11. I don't care.
Why is that, Mike? Do you have any reason, any thinking?
He doesn't need to. So kids grow up dreaming of the Elite 11, right? And it's a great, great honor to have it. They grow up dreaming of Arch Manning didn't grow up dreaming of that. Arch Manning was in locker rooms, you know, with his uncles winning Super Bowls. The Elite 11 is a pimple on his butt. He doesn't care. Doesn't care. So he doesn't have to go. What upside is there for him to go there so that people can say he's overrated? Because that's it, what everybody's going to say. And here's the problem for poor Arch Manning. And again, I always preface poor. He's going to be more famous than me. He's going to be richer than me. Probably already is. He's going to get more girls than I ever did. And he's going to have a better life than I ever will. So poor Arch Manning, but he can't live up to it. He just can't. It's impossible. Trevor Lawrence, here's my example. Number one player, best quarterback I ever saw in high school. Went to Clemson, won a national title as a true freshman. Okay, then went on to be the number one pick in the NFL draft. You can't have more success than that, right? But there are people, trolls, idiots, morons on the internet that say, he sucked. He didn't win the Heisman. He lost in the playoff. You know, he got you get the benefit of the doubt against Ohio State. Like, there's just, there's morons everywhere that will, and how, so let's say Arch Manning goes and wins a national championship at Texas, which would be amazing. He goes on to become the number one pick in the NFL draft, which could happen. There's still going to be people say that he sucks, and I'm not saying he sucks, but I am the only one who apparently has the cojones to say this last name matters. It just matters.
Well, yeah, let's talk. Again, here's the reality. I'll let you respond, right? Everybody on Twitter, everyone on social media, the morons, as you call them, they're all basically giving you a victory lap for way to go, Mike. Now your name is out there. You're getting the publicity you want. You're getting the name that you want out there. Job well done. So there are a cynical number of folks who are basically saying this is all an orchestrated effort on your part. Let me just talk down to Arch Manning, and that allows Mike Farrell to get his name out there. How do you respond to the folks who would sort of essentially accuse you of mm-hmm. making this up or creating this controversy for your own benefit?
Yeah. Well, it's you know, clickbait is what they call it, and people don't know what clickbait is, because if you put something out on a podcast, I guess people are clicking that, but if you put something out on social media, people aren't clicking on it and whatever. So, you know, I get accused of that. I don't care. I couldn't care less. When this blew up, it was actually an annoyance to me. You know, I'm not trying to make my name in this industry. I've made my name. Okay. I've done well for myself. I'm content. Does that mean I lost my drive to write, to evaluate? No, I'm going to do that until I'm dead, but I don't care. This is an annoyance more than it's good. You know, there are some people that have this stuff go viral and they're like, oh yes, this is great. We're getting talked about. We're going to get followers. We're going to get clicks, all this, you know, sponsors. I don't care. Couldn't care less. I would like this to go away, but I will tell you this. The reason I'm talking about it is because it hasn't gone away. And it will. Next week, there'll be something else that somebody's talking about, and no one will care about my hot take about Arch Manning. And I'll be happier then than I am now, because I'm really tired of it. Because in this world, you know, something that is considered disparaging gets you 100 times more attention than something that says great. I said last week when I was doing my Elite 11 breakdowns that it's a great battle between Malachi Nelson and Dante Moore as the number one player and quarterback in this class. Guess how many people cared? Three. Mm-hmm. You know, a couple USC fans, a couple Oregon fans, you know, bleary-eyed, waking up at 11 or whatever they do out in the West Coast and looking at it and like, oh, sweet. Like, but I say Arch Manning's overrated and all of a sudden the world is paying attention to me. That's stupid. I don't like it.
Well, you mentioned, you know, I think five, maybe quarterbacks ahead of Arch. I think I heard you right. You said he's about the 6-7 spot. Who are those quarterbacks you have in front of him right now?
I'm still going through it. You know, there's Vezina going to Clemson. I like Nelson going to USC. I like Dante Moore going to Oregon. I like, there's some others that I saw at the Elite 11. I don't really want to put out the list. I mean, Nico Emelavea going to California, you know, he's from California going to Tennessee. He's a kid I like. He didn't participate in the Elite 11 either. He's playing volleyball. Right. You know, there are other players that I do like. Those are like four that I'll be comfortable naming. Okay. You know, is Eli Holston one of them? No, he's the Alabama commitment. I think Alabama would have really liked to have Arch Manning. You know, and listen, Kirby and Saban are defensive coaches, but you know, Bill O'Brien's a pretty smart guy, and he was successful as a head coach and, you know, a general manager in the NFL, and he knows more about quarterbacks than I ever will. Todd Monken knows a lot more than I ever will. On and on, these guys are smarter than me. They like Arch. But I will tell you this, there's this assumption that he was number one on everybody's list, and that is completely false. Not true at all. Everybody wanted him, but there's also about eight quarterbacks, nine quarterbacks that everybody wanted in this class too.
And obviously, Arch still has time to improve, right? So my assumption would be, I'll make an assumption, you tell me if I'm wrong, that as this next season goes on for Arch, if you see that improvement, you will not be shy about saying, hey, this kid's improved. I see him in that 4 or 5-star rating at that point, if you see sort of the progression you're hoping to see, correct?
Yeah, that's how it works. We've had a lot of kids that over the years that we ranked lower than than some other people did, and we bumped them up and said we were wrong. You know, being wrong is part of this process. I mean, people brought up the Mahomes tweet where I said Patrick Mahomes, that was the worst move of the draft by the Chiefs trading up to get Mahomes, right? Right. I was wrong. Really, really wrong.
A little bit. It was a little bit, yeah.
Stupid of me to say. But at the time, I was thinking Deshaun Watson, who's had other issues on the field. He's been really good. I thought Deshaun Watson was the guy they were trading up for. So I'm like, okay, the Chiefs are being smart here. They're moving up. They're getting Deshaun Watson. I think he, because I thought he was the best quarterback in that class from a talent and competitive standpoint. And then Andy Reid goes and gets Patrick Mahomes. And I'm like, this guy freelance is like crazy. I mean, he's off platform all over the place. And for us quarterback purists, that's scary. And now you see everybody imitating it. Zach Wilson and the New York Jets got drafted so high because he's off platform. That's the whole big thing, off platform. Now you see at camps, these kids throwing underarm, you know, and sidearm and, you know, behind their back. Or
no look, no look passes are a thing now.
Yeah. And it's so, it's like, yeah, they see Matthew Stafford do it in the Super Bowl, and all of a sudden, there we go. We're going to do that. And only select people could do that because they're really, really good at it. So, yeah, I was wrong about that. I'll be wrong about plenty of other stuff. I was part of the crew that had Kyle Wright as the five-star quarterback heading to Miami. I mean, Brock Berlin, it goes way, way back. Mm-hmm. We're always wrong. We're always right. And it's probably for quarterbacks, maybe 50-50.
All right. Anything else you want to add on Arch Manning? I don't want to make this the Arch Manning experience here. Anything else you want to add for the public who wants to talk more about it? My assumption is at this point, you're done talking about this. You're going to move forward. So your final comments on this.
Well, listen, I got national radio shows lined up the butt for the next 2-3 days. So I'm going to continue to be talking about this because that's what they care about. They don't give a crap about, you know, anything else. They want to hear my take on Arch. So I'll still be talking about it as long as people want to talk about it. But I can't wait for this to be over. And I will tell you this, I think it's going to be very difficult for the big companies out there, you know, and we know who they are, to drop him from number one. He's number one everywhere. And it's going to be really, really difficult to drop him from number one. So maybe I'm in a position of power in some ways where I'm going to have him lower. And then I can move him up if he's the number one player in the country and say, oops, I'm an idiot. Right. But I will tell you this, he's locked in at number one. He's committed to a big, big program. Everyone's going to have a whole lot of trouble dropping him down. Well, and I will guarantee you this, nobody's dropping him from a fifth star. Nobody.
And I'm sure people are screaming at their car radios right now or whatever, asking me to ask this question. Why won't they? I assume I know the answer, Mike, but why won't they drop him down? What will cause them to not drop him?
It's just hard to do. It's really hard to do. And I will tell you this, it's not, nothing's rigged, but when you get into rankings kids so early, and when I started doing this, you were ranking one class. I think I started with the 1998 class, and that was it. We didn't care about 99. And then things started to progress. And then as competition came in, you know, right around 2010, 2011, competition started ranking classes below junior and then below sophomore. So you have to rank these kids earlier, and you have much less of a body of work to do so. But herein lies the rub, is that if you rank a kid extremely high and then you drop them, you're going to be accused of dropping them because you hate that fan base or you're biased, this, that. I mean, it's easier to move kids up because everybody loves that than it is to move kids down. So he's probably going to have a really good year. He had a good freshman year, and it's very rare to start as a freshman quarterback at that school. He had a solid sophomore year and a solid junior year. I mean, he hasn't progressed, but he hasn't regressed. He's just kind of been steady, and I think he'll be steady this upcoming season, and he'll put up numbers. He'll probably have 32 touchdowns and 3 picks. And I don't think he's going to drop further, but he's probably not going to attend any of the All-Star games, because why would he? You're probably going to just be able to evaluate him during the regular season against low-rated competition and maybe one playoff game, maybe two, and that's it. So his evaluation period is over for him. So dropping him, I mean, he has to do something really bad, like a nationally televised game where he throws 4 picks. And even then, because the last name's Manning, it's going to be difficult to drop him.
Let's move on to another quarterback that made news. Folks in Oregon are ecstatic. Folks in Michigan are not so much ecstatic. I think obviously the tea leaves were blowing in this direction, Mike, for a while. I think you were hinting this way as well. But Dante Moore announces to Oregon, obviously a big get for Dan Lanning and really his kind of first recruiting class. How much of a game changer is this for the Ducks to pick up Dante Moore?
It's their version of Arch Manning, but it's a smaller version because, you know, Dante Moore's uncles aren't legends and his grandfather's not a legend.
To be fair, do we know his uncles? I don't know. Do you know his uncles? I don't want to say
maybe
that.
Maybe they're okay. Legends and something else. All right. Fair enough. I don't really know, and I don't. I just know that there's not the bloodlines there. And that's going to make national news. I mean, it made news. It's a big deal. Most of the news was about Harbaugh and not being able to recruit because C.J. Carr, you know, Lloyd Carr's grandson, went to Notre Dame, and then, you know, Dante Moore at MLK leaves the state to go to Oregon. What's wrong with Harbaugh? Blah, blah, blah. That's most of the headlines around Dante Moore. What it should be is Dan Lanning taking over from Mario Cristobal. The bar is very, very high recruiting. And the relationship that he has with Coach Dillingham there, the offensive coordinator, and the way they played this, it's difficult to restrain yourself sometimes in recruiting. And what everything I've been told about Dante Moore, and I know him as well as I know Arch Manning, which means not at all. I've never interviewed him. He doesn't even follow me on Twitter, which is a little bit insulting. I don't expect Arch to follow me, but Dante, I mean, come on, you know. But everything I've been told about this process with him is it's relationship driven. It's not, you can't over recruit this kid. You can't be, you know, in his grill all the time about recruiting. You have to talk about everything else. NIL is a part of everything, but it's not NIL driven. So this isn't, you know, Phil Knight dropping buckets of billions of dollars on the kid like everybody else thinks, like, oh geez, Michigan can't compete with Nike money. No, this was well played. And I think honestly it came down to trust. And I think, you know, Harbaugh interviewing for the Vikings job opened the door for somebody else to come in and steal this kid.
Yeah, I was going to ask that question. I mean, I don't want to make this about Harbaugh, but that's obviously the natural next question here is Harbaugh had this kid, I think, since eighth grade, right? He was in this kid's ear. He was talking to him, offering him. I mean, Kenny Dillingham just got to Oregon from Florida State, right? So he had to build that relationship a lot faster, a lot quicker than Harbaugh did. So do you think Harbaugh missed because of the Viking stuff, because of his offense? Do you have any sense for where Harbaugh fell short on this one?
I think my guess is, you know, the Vikings, I don't know if that's true or not. I know things sort of turn. So the way the timeline here works is that Dante Moore was looking at Notre Dame and then CJ Carr committed there. And I don't think Michigan really cared that much. I mean, yeah, they would have liked him, but, and then Notre Dame started talking about CJ Carr accelerating and becoming part of the 2023 class. And before that, well before that in February, Harbaugh interviewed for the Vikings. So, you know, if you go back to January, this was a Michigan Notre Dame thing. And then you fast forward to now and it became an Oregon and Michigan thing. Notre Dame got their guy. And I think it's just two and two together. I mean, the relationship with Dillingham went up and the relationship, you also got to remember, I mean, Gattis left Michigan, the offensive coordinator, to go to Miami. There's so many other factors here. And you know, until the kid says it out loud what it was, and he's only going to focus on the positives of Oregon, he's not going to say why he didn't stay home. We can just guess, and those are my guesses.
If you're Michigan fans, are you concerned about this recruiting trend under Harbaugh?
Yeah, I am. The recruiting class is okay. They got some 4-stars in there, but you know, they whiffed on two big quarterback names, and that's concerning. They're coming off a playoff. They're coming off a win over Ohio State. This should be the peak of Harbaugh recruiting, and it's not. And I do think, you know, listen, they cut his salary. Mm-hmm. They embarrassed him. And I think he just flipped the middle finger back to them with the Vikings thing. I think he really thought he was going to get the Vikings job. And now it's kind of a weird, weird dynamic where he's back and he says he's never going to do it again. But it's being used against him in recruiting. I can't say kids don't believe him because I don't know what kids believe or not, but I know it's being used against him in recruiting.
How much, if at all, does Mel Tucker play a factor in this? Obviously now recruiting pretty well at Michigan State. How much does the Mel Tucker factor, you think, impact Harbaugh in the state of Michigan?
Not so much. I mean, you know, Michigan State gets Michigan State kids. And by that, I mean, there's certain programs that really gravitate towards Michigan State. And there's programs that gravitate towards Michigan. And that's always been the way it is in the state. Certainly it helps that they had that run last year. But Ohio State's a bigger problem for Michigan. And I think also the fact that Michigan is struggling to get into the Southeast consistently, whereas Ohio State is just doing it, you know, Urban Meyer did it, now Ryan Day's doing it, yeah. Or, you know, get into California more consistently. They've done it. Michigan's done a good job at California, less of a good job in the Southeast, or Texas. I mean, Ohio State's recruiting nationally, and they're pulling in, you know, when Michigan's striking out on Dante Moore, Ohio State's still celebrating 2 5-star wide receivers committing to their program. I think that's more of a factor than Michigan State is.
We've mentioned this program a few times already in the show, Mike, so I've got one question for you. Uh-huh. Is the U back? Miami has had a couple of nice pickups here in the recruiting trail of late. Mario's doing some good stuff in there. Are you buying what you're shaking your head already? So you're not buying what's going on in Miami?
Well, you asked, are they back? They're not back.
Okay.
They're 0-0 under Cristobal. Are they headed back? Yes, they are. I'm excited about it because I grew up in New England. I was a Boston College guy because of Flutie magic, right? And Flutie, you know, through the miracle of Miami against that amazing Miami team. And I'm a Cowboy fan, and Jimmy Johnson came from the Hurricanes to Miami being great was fun. Michael Irvin, honestly, yeah. There's just so many things about Miami being great that was awesome and cool and fun, you know, and they haven't been great, and they've been really average and mediocre. It's kind of sad. And I don't really like it. I'm not rooting for them, but I want to see them get back and get their swagger. And Cristobal is the guy who's going to do that. I when Randy Shannon was hired, I didn't believe he would do it. When Al Golden was hired, I didn't believe he would do it. When Mark Wick was hired, I didn't believe he would do it because, you know, he had a layup at Georgia and he couldn't take them to the next level. So how is he going to do it at Miami? Manny Diaz, no. You know, Larry Coker inheriting it, no. Mario Cristobal, yes. I knew he would recruit this way, and he's going to continue to recruit this way. And I do believe over the next 3 or 4 years, he's going to either have a number one recruiting class overall, or it's going to be number two or three, which we haven't seen at Miami in a very long time. And they will be back. But right now, no, they're not back.
What makes Mario such an effective recruiter? He had that same, you know, legendary status, I guess, at Alabama, obviously at Oregon as well. What makes him, from what you hear from folks you talk to, what makes him such an effective recruiter?
Well, he's learned from some great ones too. You know, he was at Rutgers with Greg Schiano, and people won't think of that name in, yeah, you know, the line of Nick Saban, you know, as a guy who taught him how to recruit. But Greg Schiano was and is a relentless recruiter, did a tremendous job in the state of Florida, did a great job before he left for the Buccaneers in New Jersey. I mean, he sold something that no one wanted to buy ever. And that was what Mario Cristobal learned from him. Then he goes to FIU, you know, and he gets run out of there, which he shouldn't have ever been run out, sure, of there, because, yeah, that's a disaster program. And then he ends up in Alabama, and he learns under a guy named Nick Saban. And he's part of that class, you know, that amazing recruiting class that won multiple national titles. And then he goes to Oregon and does the same thing. He's learned from the best. He's relentless. He's affable. He's personable. He gets it. You know, there's a lot of coaches that are affable, personal. They get it. They work hard. They're relentless. Something about him just, I don't know, it makes you want to hang out with him and be his bud. And I know I don't want to be his buddy because I don't want to be buddies with anybody, but I get it. When I talk to him, I could feel the excitement about the U, and even I got that at Oregon, but now it's infectious. He couldn't be happier. If Nick Saban retired tomorrow and Alabama said, come here, he would say no. Yeah. There's no job he wants other than this one. And I think he's going to be successful.
We've mentioned some of the big names already. Who's next, Mike? What are the next kind of names you're tracking that you think are close to decisions? Who are kind of the big fish that you're still keeping an eye on out there right now?
Well, it's the dead time, so I hope there's not too many. You know, obviously, you just had the Florida State situation at quarterback. I think they're going to sort of prop up a little bit with Glenn.
Are there issues at Florida State? Is there something that you think deeper there?
No, I just think Mike Norvell inherited a bad situation. I mean, Jimbo left the cupboard bare for Taggart. Taggart didn't help anything. And then, you know, Norvell gets hired during COVID and he can't do what he does. And now he's playing catch up ever since, you know, and, you know, they've had some stinging losses. I mean, you know, Sam Howell going to North Carolina would have changed the trajectory of Florida State from a national offensive perception. So sometimes you miss on one guy or you lose one guy late and it could just change everything. I don't think Norvell is doing a bad job. I still don't think he's set up for success because, you know, Florida State's still digging out. But it's funny because everybody's like, okay, Coach Dion is our next coach already. It's like Coach Dion, Coach Dion, Coach Dion. And that's got to be tough for Norvell. And he's been given longer than Taggart. And that's tough too. You know, so there's a lot of things going. But, you know, they're going to upgrade at quarterback. My thing about July is I think things are going to slow down quite a bit as they usually do. I think in August we'll get back to high school football. And then the kids who wanted to save their official visits or take a few official visits during the season and into December, you'll start to see another flow of commitments around then. It's the same with the portal. The portal's kind of dead now. Yeah. So I don't have anybody I'm really looking at to make a decision. There will be commitments and we'll evaluate them as they come. But I think we're going to start seeing a little bit of a lull when it comes to commitments. And then at the end of the season, is decommitment time, because at the end of the season, the portal blows up.
Yep.
At the end of the season, coaches can do their in-home visits. At the end of the season, kids have to make a decision as to whether they still want to go to that school or not. And I'm not saying Arch Manning's going to be one of those kids, but I'm really curious to see, and here I am bringing him up again. You know,
you just can't stop, Mike. Clickbait.
Well,
here we
go. Let's say a team, and we don't have to say Texas. We could say someone else. Struggles out of the gate and their coach is on the hot seat. You know, Florida State, there's a great example. Florida State. Sure. It changes everything. It changes your thought process. It changes, you know. So I think that's where we're going to start seeing a lot. And the nightmare for coaches is that first couple weeks of December when they're trying to stop kids from hitting the portal while recruiting high school kids to their school. And the NCAA wants to do a 60-day window, you know, after the conference title games. That's not going to change anything. I mean, that's the busiest time anyways. And they want to do a 15 or 14 day window in May. That's also the busiest time after spring. I personally have thought they needed to refine the calendar of the portal, but now I'm rethinking it. I think it's fine the way it is. It's really in a lull right now. So this is kind of a quiet period for the portal. And the kids are going to go into the portal, let's say after four games, so you could save your redshirt season. You can't go in. Well, then you're just going to wait till December, and then everybody's going to go in at once, and then coaches are going to just lose their mind because all of a sudden, one day, 500 kids are in the portal, and they don't know what to do. So the next busy, busy time for recruiting and the fun time for recruiting is going to be probably at the end of the season.
You haven't talked about it yet on the show, but curious your reaction to it. Today we heard from the new Big 12 commissioner, Brett Yormark. Obviously, he's got a tough little task in front of him, obviously, with conference realignment. What did you make of the hire of Brett Yormark to the Big 12?
I think it's good. I think it's fine for businessmen to be hired because this is a business now. You know, and I think you have to navigate this business very carefully. So if you've had success navigating businesses before, that's what this is all about. The Pac-12's hire was intriguing as well. These are business decisions, and you know, they all have to live up to Sankey. But I will say, you know, Kevin Warren was hired. It wasn't an overall business decision for for him to be hired. He just fell into a tremendous opportunity with a great TV deal, and now the Big Ten can sort of be aggressive and pick. And they said they're, they haven't said it, but I've heard that they're going to slow it down. The SEC is happy with 16. The ACC, if they make changes, then the grant of rights could blow up.
Yeah.
Because the grant of rights is locked in for the current model of the ACC. If they go out and try to get a Notre Dame and woo them and give them a ton of money, they're going to lose teams. They're going to lose programs. Big 12 and Pac-12 are the ones to look at. And I think the smart thing would be for those two guys to get together and say, let's make this the big Pac-12 and let's just merge. And then power comes with that. Oregon and Washington are tremendous programs. Utah's a great program. You've got academics with Cal and Stanford. And then they're playing games against the Oklahoma States and Baylor's and TCU's of the world. And it's just intriguing for everybody. And that's the only way I think either conference survives.
I guess we'll all be watching to see what Brett's first few moves are as he takes the reins. August 1st is, I think, the date Bob Bowlesby will step away. And Brett Yormark now in the chair, Mike.
He's working now, though. He's working now.
For sure, yeah. Well, obviously, he did the presser today, and he was the forward-facing visionary that was kind of at the mic and leading that through. So clearly, that baton has been passed, Mike. Let's head over to Mike's list. MikeFerrellSports.com is where you can find these. New list popped out this week, Mike. Top 50 tight ends. That's what we got here. So take us first and foremost through the evaluation process. It's got to be a lot of fun watching tight end video, no?
It's interesting, I'll tell you that much. And it's also, you know, looking in the group of five versus power five, you know, there's Utah has two guys in the top 10. South Carolina has two guys in the top 10, and Georgia has three guys in the top, I believe, 16. That's difficult too, because where do you put a Darnell Washington compared to a guy who, you know, he's obviously not the target. Brock Bowers is the target. You know, where do you put an Eric Gilbert who hasn't played in a couple of years, but was so good as a freshman at LSU a couple of years ago, compared to a group of five kid who is the starter? And where do you put the true freshman? So I don't know. Tight ends are, I didn't think this list would blow up. You know, I knew the quarterback one would, running back one would, wide receiver one, I knew for sure that would blow up. Tight ends, people get a little lukewarm about it. And the next one's offensive lineman, and people get a little lukewarm about that. But the tight end one, because it was at the top, Brock versus Mayer, that was a big deal. Because of, you know, the Gamecocks and Utah having two in the top 10, you know, because of the dispute between, you know, Eric All and the rest of the Big Ten tight ends, you know, Will Mallory at Miami. And then, of course, Eric Gilbert and guys like that who are polarizing. It just, it blew up. It didn't blow up as big as the other ones, but it's been very fun to discuss this with people because tight ends are a huge, huge part if you utilize them properly.
Yeah. What was the separator between Bowers and Mayer? How did you kind of get Bowers one, Mayer two?
Bowers is a year younger. He showed what he could do last year. Mayer's awesome. You know, Mayer's the Gronk type. You know, and Bowers is the, I guess, the Anthony Gonzalez type. I mean, they're both great players. But as a receiver, you know, Bowers is a little bit more athletic and more fluid. And Mayer's a better blocker. So it was because he's a year younger, kind of. That was kind of it.
How big is the drop-off between two and three? You know, obviously, Bowers, Mayer, probably the top two. How big is that drop-off before you get to your third tight end?
Huge. It's big. You know, a lot of people look at this list and say, oh, my gosh, it's talented. And, you know, Matt Miller, who works at ESPN now, mentioned, you know, how talented the tight end group is. It is. But after the top two, there's a bit of a drop-off. And, you know, you're not going to see multiple tight ends in the first round of the NFL draft. That's just not the way it works there. It's the same as running backs. But the drop-off is there. I mean, Stogner is nowhere close to Mayer or Bowers. And Eric Gilbert is all ceiling again. I mean, he's a five-star kid coming out of high school. He looked great at LSU, but he's had so many on-field issues and, you know, a couple transfers. And he had a good spring game, two touchdowns, but you know, he's a wild card. I would say he's the only one in that top 10 that could ever, you know, challenge those top two.
Interesting. One name that caught my attention, you were talking about as you started, group of five, power five, sort of how do you differentiate that? Number 22 on your list, Kamori Gamble, went from Florida to UCF. How do you evaluate him sort of in a new offensive system, going sort of changing levels, if you will, right now, even though UCF plays some really good opponents? How did you get Kamori Gamble at 22?
You guess. I mean,
fair enough. I'll take it.
It's, listen, I mean, 22 versus 24 versus 25 is like, where do you slot him? You know, I liked what I saw of him at Florida, and I think he's going into a situation where he'll be targeted a little bit more. But, so, you know, he's also behind some guys that haven't done as much, and that's based on ceiling and such. So, but really, honestly, and I'll be honest, I'm honest about Arch Manning, and I'm honest about rankings, and I'm honest about everything because I've been doing this for so long, I can be honest. You know, a lot of this is just, it's not darts at a dartboard, but it's like, how do I get Davis Allen number 26? Should he be number 20? And you have to make those decisions, and it's fluid and fluctuates quite a bit, and it's going to change quite a bit, but that's what's fun about it. This isn't me saying I'm the expert. You guys all suck. This is perfect 1 through 50. You're all idiots. This is me saying, this is kind of my shot at it. It's my opinion. And tell me what you disagree about and tell me what you agree on. And if you're not a lunatic fanboy, you know, if you think Eric All should be number one because you're a go blue face painter, great. But if you're like a football fan, let's discuss and talk about it. That's the fun part.
All right, well, give me some names on this list then that maybe people don't know or haven't followed, you think can have maybe a solid year, even a sort of a breakout season.
So funny, because I can't even see the list because it's so small on my phone. But Davis Allen is one of them at Clemson. I mean, if they had a good quarterback, and then DJ could be a good quarterback, or Cade Klubnik could be a good quarterback, I mean, we'll have to see. He's a guy that I think could be much higher. You know, they've used the tight end in the past when they've had quarterbacks that know how to check down. You know, the interesting guy is Keon Zipperer at 50, you know, because Gamble's gone and he's supposed to be the guy, but I'm not even sure if he's the best tight end on this particular roster. And then Otten, Washington, a lot of people were like, well, why would you even have him? He's a true freshman. They've got two other guys. This is sort of a projection as to, I'm not saying he's going to be Brock Bowers, but I'm saying that he's talented enough. Obviously, he's got the bloodlines with his brother being in the NFL now, that he could jump in there and really make a difference. And I like Kuntz at Old Dominion. You know, he's a former Penn State guy. I think he's found his fit. I think he's found his niche. And I think he's going to be a guy that a lot of people don't pay attention to anymore because he's not at Penn State. But the NFL will certainly pay attention to him.
Again, you can find this list on Mike's website, MikeFerrellSports.com. You can also find it on his social media, especially his Twitter and his Instagram, and that's at MFerrellSports. Mike, and we got what, offensive lineman next week for everyone to get excited about?
I believe so. Yeah, I mean, I know so. It's just that's a pain in the butt to do. You know, and it's not going to break it out to tackles and guards and centers. I'm just
what are we doing, Mike?
Oh, yeah, I'm just going to lump them all in there and see what happens. And so what I do on these is I try to see what the feedback is and who people complain the most about. So I still owe a tight end article, which will be an explanation from, you know, 1 to 10, 11 to 20, and on and on and on as to why I felt one thing and fans felt another. And so that'll be done. And then the offensive line, I've already started to dig into the offensive line a bit. That'll be the least sexy one, you know, and then we'll move into defensive linemen. And again, tackles and ends are going to be in there. So people are going to go crazy. Like, oh my gosh, how Jalen Carter should be in his own category versus Will Anderson. And then linebackers, then defensive backs. And then I'll be done. And then I can start over because football camp will have started, and we'll start to get a sense as to who's going to win the Texas A&M job and who's going to win the LSU job and all that stuff for quarterbacks. And we could start over and tick people off even more with a preseason list.
Are you going to do top 50 kickers? Is that, did I miss that? Oh, no kickers, Mike?
Or long snappers. Kickers?
Wow. Listen,
I've always said this, always. Kickers are not human beings. They're not. They don't belong on a football team. And that's a, you know, people get really upset about that, and especially kicker families. I will tell you, the most decorative film packages I used to get in the late 90s and early 2000s were from kicker parents. I mean, they would be gorgeous. Folders laminated, video, and it's all little Johnny kicking extra points. and you know, little Johnny, barely getting a 34 yarder through the uprights or whatever. When I saw something like that, when it was thick, I looked at it and I immediately knew when I opened it, it would be a kicker. And then I immediately just threw it out. Now, kickers are important. They win football games and they can lose football games. But what I really don't like is that there's guys out there, blood, sweat, and tears. Jerseys are all bloody and dirty and they're killing each other. And then the kicker trots out with the clean uniform and he's the one who's deciding whether or not this football game is won. Football would be extremely interesting if there's no such thing as an extra point or a field goal. Think about that for a second.
Okay.
And now tell me what you think.
Makes those top 50 tight ends more important at that point, right? I mean, that seems like a great goal line play to get the tight end involved.
Makes everything more important. And who was the kicker for the Bengals? The dude from Florida. I forget his
McPherson.
Name,
but, Evan McPherson, yeah. I think.
Listen, great, great kicker. Won two playoff games for them. And he watched the halftime show. Why? Because he doesn't need to go in the locker room. He doesn't need to hear any strategy. You know what you do?
Kick it through the yellow things. Yeah.
Yeah. We need you to kick a field goal now. Do you know how to do that? And that just, I guess I'm not upset about it, but I'm like, if I'm a 6'4", 330 pound offensive lineman who's had a guy, bull rushing me all day long, and a kicker goes out and misses a 32 yarder, I just want to kill him.
Wow. All right, so last, who do you dislike more, Arch Manning or kickers? Just kidding. We'll get back. We'll get back to that in next week's episode.
I love.
Yeah, let's get that back. I was going to ask you. We have the Ask Mike segment, which no one ever sends questions, so I just do it myself. Is that your prized possession? Now you've got this whole setup behind you. You got helmets and a nice. Is that it right there?
One of them. The best one, and I'll bring it out, is the Tom Brady Michigan one.
Oh wow!
And it's funny because Michigan fans think I hate Michigan. Every fan base thinks I hate them in every way, shape, or form. But a Tom Brady is like of the helmet world. It's the Ark of the Covenant. And, I wanted a Michigan one more so than a Patriots one because I grew up in New England and I don't dislike the Patriots, but I'm not a Patriots fan. And I didn't want a Buccaneers one. And Michigan has beautiful, gorgeous helmets. So that's my prized possession.
This week, the British Open tees off. Now, apparently, it's the Open Championship. I don't know when we changed that, by the way. When I was growing up, it was the British Open.
Yep.
Who knew? So that tees off at like 1 a.m. East Coast time here Thursday morning. Mike, who do you got? Who's your money on?
I'm going Shoffley.
Wow.
I haven't made my picks yet, so I'm in a pool where you pick golfers from seven different tiers. So, all the big-name guys will be in tier one, and you just pick, some unknowns in tier seven, and Tiger Woods is in tier three, as an example of the odds, he's 80-1. But I think Shoffley, because he's just been playing so well, he just won the Travelers here in Connecticut, but he also won the Scottish Open on links courses.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a weakness. Zalatoris is a dark horse if he can putt consistently, but Lynx golf is all about lag putting. The greens are sometimes longer than a football field. And I think Shoffley is just, he's on fire in that respect. And I don't think he's going to make any mistakes.
All right, we'll have to get Mike's top 50 lag putters for a future episode. Okay, well that may be better than offensive lineman. I'm not gonna lie to you.
I think it is too. I mean,
it might be better.
John Rahm at 32.
I had him at 27. That's just my own personal list. But I mean, we'll take this offline. We don't want to bother everybody out there. We'll take this offline. But thanks for tuning in for another edition of the Mike Farrell Sports Talk Show. Again, if you're not already doing so, please subscribe. Believe Podcast Network. Also, go to Mike's YouTube channel. He's posting more videos up there as well. So every now and again, I think Mike gets the itch, gets a little bored in the afternoon. He's just got to do a video. So go to YouTube. You'll see all those videos that Mike's doing as these thoughts come into his head throughout the day. And then at MikeFarrellSports.com, Mike, how's the site coming along?
Good. Traffic's up. We got some partners interested. So we're in discussions with that. And I think it's going to really blow up soon, to a good level. I mean, you need partners to do that. But a lot of people are interested. And then after this week, more people are interested, of course, because of this whole viral garbage. But yeah, you know, and I told you, I mean, listen, my schedule is seat of my ass, right?
He's not kidding, folks. No, he's not. When Mike says this, he is literally not joking.
I have no idea when I'm going to do something or what I'm going to, and it just, I get the itch and then I'll do like six things and then I'll go silent on you for like 2 days. I'll still produce content. But when it comes to video, this fat, ugly face only wants to be on at certain times. And it's very unpredictable. You know, like I hit you up at what, six? And I said, let's do this. When can you do this? You're like, after 7:15. I said, let's do 7:30. And then I hit you up and I said, could you do 7:15?
Because these are true facts.
Yeah. I didn't want to wait till 7:30. Because then I'm going till 8:30 and I got Peaky Blinders to watch and I got articles.
Busy man. Busy man. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's a little peel the curtain back of the Mike Farrell Sports Show here.
But
Mike says, let's talk at 7:15. We hit record. We have no idea what we're talking about, but somehow you listen to it. Hopefully you like it and hopefully you'll come back again and join us for future episodes. It'd be great.
I'm going to say that I think it's really good. And it's not because I'm in it. I just think this is good. I just do. I think I've listened to a lot of podcasts and I've heard a lot of people talking back and forth. You know, I don't know what the hell they're talking about. I'm not an expert, but I will tell you the real truth. I'll talk to you about anything. I don't care if you do the Ask Mike section about my favorite ice cream. I'll talk about that. I don't care. And I think it's entertaining.
I got to know your favorite ice cream now.
I'm so fat. Today.
I saw that video today. It was a really vulnerable moment. I actually felt like I couldn't watch it for a minute. I had to like look away because I felt like I was watching something that wasn't meant to be broadcast. Mike, are you okay?
There were a lot of people called me a fat ass because of the Arch Manning thing, right?
Yeah. So that's you also shaved, by the way. You're watching on video, Mike, you seem to have shorn beard a little bit. Yes.
Well, here's the other thing too, is I don't know how to shave. I want to have a goatee. Mm-hmm. So I have something that shaves everything. And then I've got a trimmer, but my trimmer is... The setting on my trimmer and the little attachment to it, I haven't been able to figure out one that keeps the goatee. So I just shave it all and then grow back. And I'm telling you, I don't know how I function as a human being because that's an example. And then all the fat ass comments and I'm like, gee, am I really that fat? And then what I did is I took the phone and you know how you do this to make yourself look thin, right? That's the big trick because you don't see your jowls. I did the opposite and I looked down and I looked at it. I'm like, oh my God, I gotta start eating some salad. But ice cream, right now I'm on an ice cream sandwich kick and I'm on a Neapolitan one, Van Chalk straw. I gotta stop. I mean, I'm just getting fatter by the minute.
One last question for you, by the way. A lot of your promo pictures I see of you wearing a suit and tie. It unnerves me. When's the last time you were in a suit and tie, Mike?
Suit and tie. Okay, so I had to dress up for a funeral recently, but I didn't wear a tie. I don't know.
That pandemic life treating you good. I like it.
I think it was probably the NBC All-American game the last time I was on TV doing that.
Okay.
And that's like... Yeah. We're talking like 2013.
Yeah, you've got this nice fixture. You've got a little suit and tie situation. You had a coat on, and I'm always like, which one? That's Mike. And it takes me a second because there's another guy in the promo with you. And I have to orient myself to figure out which one of you is Mike. Well, and then I'm like, oh, it's the suit and tie. How did that happen?
First of all, that's like 9 years old. That's 9 years old, about 40 pounds ago. And I look good in that picture, but it's the only picture I'll use. It's angled, as you can see, it's not straight on. I don't like straight on pictures, and I don't like it. So you notice on my website, there's no picture of me because I'm not a photogenic human being. So all the pictures that I have mostly are from 10 years ago in a suit when I was doing television for either ESPN or NBC.
Well, behind the curtain, look, if you stuck in for this, you got some nuggets from Mike, a little behind the scenes, a little behind the curtain of MikeFerrillaSports.com. Again, thanks for tuning in for another week. Again, make sure you subscribe and follow Mike everywhere. You can follow him on social media and check out that website. We'll be back again soon. We don't know when. You just heard Mike's schedule. It's whenever. So if you subscribe to the YouTube channel, though, by the way, it doesn't matter because it just pops right up in your feed. You just get an alert. Like, you don't have to worry about it. I'll worry about Mike's schedule.
You don't have to.
I'll take care of that for you all. So just subscribe and I'll take care of it.
Every random moment I can, I'll hit you up and just say, hey, it's 9:30 in the morning. Could you pod? Yeah. And you're like, I got a job. Jerk.
I might be able to 9:30, actually. I'm usually pretty slow at 9:30. We should work on that.
Okay. Well, work this out. I can't schedule anything.
I know. Nothing's scheduled here. Nothing. I did not write it down. No pen in my hand. My hands are free, and you are free to go, everybody. Have a fantastic week, and we'll talk to you soon. Take care.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.